Welcome back to another deep dive. This is where we take that stack of sources you sent over and really try to unpack them.
Yeah, hunt for those key insights. Maybe find a few things you didn't spot first time round.
We're basically your guides through the details.
Try not to get lost in the weeds, but getting you the core knowledge.
And today we're jumping into something pretty major from the EU. It's the proposed end-of-life vehicle regulation.
Or ELVR, as everyone seems to be
It's
calling it.
IELDR.
And look, this isn't just tweaking things around the edges. The European Commission, they're aiming to fundamentally reshape the whole automotive sector with this.
Pushing it towards what, a circular future?
Exactly, a truly circular model. That's the goal.
Okay. And for this deep dive, our main source is from SLOOPA.
The European Association of Automotive Suppliers.
Big group. Represents what, over 3,000 companies?
Yeah, and 120 big global suppliers, too.
Yeah.
So, you can bet they've got a keen interest in how this whole ELVR thing shakes out.
They're right on the front lines, aren't they? The ones who actually have to make the parts and implement these changes.
Absolutely. Their perspective is crucial.
Yeah.
They're the ones innovating, making the components, understanding their view on the practical challenges and what they see as priorities.
Yeah.
That's key to figuring out if this ambitious ELVR plan can actually work.
So that sets our mission for this session, then. We need to get our heads around the big picture goals of the ELVR from the Commission side, using your source,
Right.
and then really zoom in on what SLOOPA is saying, their priorities, their recommendations, the potential roadblocks they see.
Basically, what does this all mean for the cars we drive, how they're made, and what happens to them, down the line?
Okay, let's get into it.
Right. So the core idea behind the ELVR proposal, it's ambitious, really ambitious. It goes way beyond just dealing with cars once they're scrap.
It's aiming for a sort of comprehensive circular policy for the entire life of the
You
vehicle.
got it. Not just end of life.
So thinking about the beginning and the middle, not just the scrap heap.
Precisely. The proposal talks explicitly about lifetime maximization strategies, things like repair, reuse, remanufacturing,
Keeping things going
refurbishment.
longer.
Yeah, keep the components in use for as long as feasibly possible. Get the maximum value out before, recycling becomes the only option left.
Okay, keeping valuable stuff out of the shredder makes sense. How does the regulation actually propose to do that?
Well, it sets out a few key paths. Stricter design requirements, for one, focusing on recyclability.
Designing for disassembly kind of thing?
Sort of, yeah. And significantly upping the required amount of recycled materials used in new cars.
Oh, okay. Mandated targets.
Big ones. Plus standardizing information flow, getting product info, moving smoothly through the value chain.
And actively enabling all those life cycle extension things you mentioned, reuse, remanufacturing.
Repair, too.
Wow. That sounds like it really could transform the industry model.
It's meant to.
And SLOOPA, reading their summary, they seem broadly supportive, at least of the overall goal, and the idea of having one set of EU rules.
Oh, definitely. They back the ambition. They see the need to support the EU's sustainability goals. And, having consistent rules across all member states is just good for business, isn't it?
Much simpler than 27 different national regulations.
Absolutely. But, and this is the big but,
Always a but.
the devil's in the details, right? Implementation. That's where SLOOPA brings in their practical experience and has some specific recommendations.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, the supplier viewpoint. Making these big targets actually, well, doable.
Exactly. Making them achievable, making the regulation workable on the ground. That's their focus.
Right. So let's unpack their key points. What's top of mind for them?
Okay, a big one is what they call technology-neutral recycled content targets.
Meaning.
Well, they support setting targets for using recycled stuff, but they really stress these targets have to be based in reality.
Achievable targets.
Achievable targets, yes, and ones that don't accidentally clash with the EU's other big goal, decarbonization.
Ah, okay. And your source points to a specific worry there with materials.
Yes, recycled plastics. That's a major one for them.
The availability.
Exactly. Is there actually enough high-quality recycled plastic available to make new car parts that meet all the safety standards? Type-approved parts.
Right, because you can't just use any old recycled plastic for, say, a bumper that needs to pass crash tests.
Precisely. It's not trivial. So SLOOPA is recommending that the commission actually checks the availability of these specific grades of recycled plastics after the regulation is adopted.
Sort of a reality check.
Yeah, and that assessment should then decide if maybe a more flexible approach is needed for sourcing that secondary plastic.
Because if the supply just isn't there, the targets become impossible no matter how good they sound on paper.
You got it. Which leads straight into their next point, getting a clear, harmonized way to calculate recycled content.
Ah, the methodology. How do you actually prove how much recycled material is in a part, and does everyone measure it the same way?
Crucial. For consistency, for fairness. SLUPA wants urgent, harmonized EU rules here, especially for chemically recycled content.
Chemical recycling is more complex to track?
It can be, yeah. They specifically suggest using a chain of custody approach like mass balance.
Okay.
Without clear, consistent rules that everyone follows, companies will have a nightmare trying to report accurately and show they're compliant, especially across different materials, different supply chains.
Needs everyone using the same ruler, basically.
Pretty much.
That transparency sounds vital. What else is a priority?
Dealing with legacy substances.
Meaning old chemicals.
Yeah, materials used in older vehicles, maybe components that are now restricted or banned in new products.
Yeah.
Hazardous stuff, potentially.
So making sure that when you reuse or recycle an old part, you're not accidentally reintroducing something harmful?
Exactly. They want alignment with existing rules like REACH and other automotive substance laws.
Makes sense.
And the principle they're pushing is repaired as produced.
Repaired as produced.
Meaning, if a component is repaired or remanufactured or reused, it still has to meet the substance rules that would apply to a brand new version of that part.
So no lowering of safety or environmental standards just because it's a secondhand part?
Right. Safety and compliance can't dip just because it's had a previous life.
Okay. Safety first. Good principle. Now, moving from materials to information flow, that sounds like another potential headache for circularity.
Oh, absolutely. Streamlined, practical information requirements. That's high on their list.
And the source mentioned something specific about VIN numbers.
Yeah, the vehicle identification number. There's an issue with a requirement to include the VIN on labels for individual parts that are meant for a reuse or remanufacturing.
The car's specific VIN on every little part. Why would that be a problem? Isn't traceability good?
Well, yes, but this is where the practical side clashes a bit with the theory. SLUPA argues that for a lot of circular processes, especially things like large-scale industrial remanufacturing, or even just efficiently sorting parts for reuse,
they don't need the original car's ID.
Not necessarily. They argue these processes often don't need that specific link back to the original vehicle VIN. Things like the original part description, the VIN, details about who dismantled the car.
Hmm.
It's not always required.
How do they manage them?
Existing systems are pretty effective at identifying the part itself, the part number, its specifications. They don't always need to know which specific car came off.
So forcing VIN tracking on every single reusable or remanufacturable part could just create a huge, maybe unnecessary data burden and labeling hassle.
That's the worry. A massive administrative load. Their recommendation is basically to limit those really detailed labeling rules,
hmm.
The ones in Annex 7, Part D2, specifically to parts intended for direct reuse as safety components.
Okay. Critical safety parts maybe need that extra tracking.
Perhaps. But for remanufactured parts, they say let's have some guidance on labeling for trade, but keep it practical. Minimum stuff.
Like?
Like the remanufacturer's name or trademark, and a simple label saying remanufactured. Information that's actually useful for the next stage, for the aftermarket.
Okay. That distinction between direct reuse and remanufacturing seems important for what info is actually needed.
It really is.
Yeah.
And that brings us to maybe their most critical point. Properly defining and integrating the role of remanufacturing itself and the companies that do it.
Oh, okay. This seems central for SLUPA.
It's a major focus. Look, the proposal does acknowledge remanufacturing, which is good. It says parts meant for remanufacturing or reuse shouldn't automatically be classed as waste.
Which is a big step, right? Away from just landfilling everything.
Huge step. But, the source points out, while the process gets mentioned, the regulation doesn't seem to fully recognize or integrate the actual role of the remanufacturers themselves.
How so?
It kind of defaults towards assuming waste management companies will be the main handlers of these parts.
And the problem with that is?
The worry is that businesses whose whole purpose is remanufacturing, you know, proper industrial operations, restoring used parts to perform like news, they might get tangled up.
Tangled how?
They might incorrectly be forced to get waste management licenses, which isn't really what they do. Or they might find it hard to even get access to the used parts they need, the cores.
Cores? Is that the industry term?
Yeah, standard term in the aftermarket. It's the used part that forms the basis for remanufacturing.
Like the heart of the remanufactured part.
Exactly.
Right.
CLIPA strongly recommends adding a definition for core right into the regulation.
Okay.
And more broadly, they want the regulation to accurately map out the real ecosystem, define all the different players and activities clearly in Article 3.
Not just waste operators.
Right. Define remanufacturers, authorized dismantlers, repair and maintenance operators, and define the processes too. Depollution, dismantling, compacting, shredding, recovery, and critically, remanufacturing itself.
That level of detail, that precision in definition, sounds absolutely vital, especially when parts might move between dismantlers, repair shops, maybe core brokers, actual remanufacturers, potentially across borders too.
Totally. Misclassifying something, especially calling a core waste when it's destined for remanufacturing, could create massive barriers, legal uncertainty.
So legal certainty for remanufacturing is a core ask then?
Definitely. Making sure cores aren't legally treated as waste, creating a level playing field, maybe even exploring incentives for these circular activities, and just having crystal clear definitions for the process, the players, and the criteria for accepting a core.
It really shows how complex things get once a car leaves the showroom floor.
Doesn't it just? And, you know, the source does mention that CLEPA's specific suggestions, their amendments to the European Parliament's draft report on the ELVR, they seem to be getting some traction.
Oh, really? With whom?
With major political groups in the Parliament, including things like that recommendation to remove the VIN requirement for most reman parts.
So these practical industry-level concerns are being heard as the legislation gets refined.
It seems so. It suggests policymakers are trying to balance the ambition with, you know, making it actually implementable.
Good. Now, before we wrap up, there was one other specific point in the source. Something about permanent magnets.
Ah, yes, another important detail. Policy alignment.
Okay.
Permanent magnets, like the ones used in electric vehicle motors, they're also covered by another piece of EU law, the Critical Raw Materials Act, or CRMA.
Right, so potential overlap.
Potential conflict, yeah.
Yeah.
CLIPA wants to make absolutely sure there aren't conflicting requirements between the ELVR and the CRMA for these magnets, especially around labeling and information.
And their recommendation.
Their strong advice, based on the source, is that for permanent magnets in end-of-life vehicles, the ELVR rules should take precedence over the CRMA ones.
To avoid confusion and double regulation.
Precisely. Keep it consistent for industry.
Okay, so let's try and pull this all together for a moment. We've seen this proposed EU ELVR is really pushing the automotive sector towards, well, much deeper circularity.
Yeah, way beyond just scrap metal.
Looking at extending the life of vehicles, of components, boosting recycled content significantly, and CLEPA, speaking for a huge chunk of the supply chain, they're generally on board with the direction.
They support the ambition, yeah.
But their feedback really drills down into those crucial, often fiddly details needed to make it work.
The practicalities.
Setting achievable targets, getting clear, harmonized rules for measuring things like recycled content, managing information flow without unnecessary burdens.
Handling legacy substances responsibly.
And critically accurately defining and integrating that vital role of remanufacturing and all the different businesses involved in keeping cars and parts going.
It really drives home the point, doesn't it? Moving from that old linear take-make-dispose model to something truly circular, it's not just about setting lofty environmental goals.
No, it's about getting the nitty-gritty right in the legislation.
The definitions, the calculation methods, the information requirements, making sure different laws don't clash.
And the supplier perspective really highlights that for this whole thing to succeed, it absolutely has to be workable for that complex web of companies.
Manufacturers, dismantlers, repair shops, remanufacturers, the whole ecosystem.
Yeah, this deep dive really showed how intertwined those big picture goals are with these very specific regulatory details.
Absolutely. It's all connected.
So what's the bottom line here for you, our listener? We've explored the EU's, frankly, bold vision for a circular automotive future with the ELVR.
And we've looked hard at the practical, detailed view from the suppliers, like the CLEPA represents, on how you bridge that gap between the big vision and the, well, the garage floor reality.
We've seen just how vital it is to get the definitions right for processes like remanufacturing, for materials like specific plastics, even for how simple information like a VIN is tracked or not tracked.
And the need for different regulations to actually talk to each other, to be aligned.
It's pretty clear that making this sustainable transition happen really hinges on getting these fine points of law right and understanding how they ripple through that whole value chain. Which kind of leaves you with a final thought to chew on. If achieving real circularity depends so much on nailing down these practical details, defining materials, defining processes, making sure information flows correctly between everyone involved in a car's life.
From the factory to the mechanic, the dismantler, the remanufacturer.
Right. If all that relies on legislative clarity, how does getting those specific definitions right impact not just the big environmental targets, but maybe the entire system of car maintenance and repair that you might encounter next time, you know, something needs fixing on your own vehicle?
Something to think about indeed.